Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today is author William Krill. Bill, as we will call him today, has recently completed a book about treatment approaches for children with post-traumatic stress disorder as a result of abuse. It is called Gentling, A Practical Guide to Treating PTSD in Abused Children. Bill received his Bachelor of Science degree in Mental Health Counseling from Gannon University in 1981 and his Master's of Science degree in Pastoral Counseling from Newman College in 1986. He is a member of the American Academy of Experts in Traumatic Stress and is a licensed professional counselor. Bill's career has given him experience in counseling children, adolescents, adults, and families. He has worked in the area of child protection, mental retardation, addiction treatment, and youth ministry, and he currently works as a mobile therapist and behavior specialist in several counties in Pennsylvania. He specializes in stress disorders that are a result of childhood abuse. Bill has several published articles and a book on youth ministry, and he resides in Hollidaysburg, Pennsylvania, with his wife and two sons, and you can find out all sorts of information at Bill's website, gentling.org. So that said, thank you so much for joining us today, Bill.
Oh, it's good to be here with you.
Well, great. So you've written this book, Gentling. I'd really like for you to explain to us what this approach is, the Gentling approach.
Well, it uses a lot of traditional therapy techniques, basically a cognitive behavioral approach, which means trying to help a person change their thinking and change their behaviors surrounding, you know, their critical event or their trauma. But in addition to that, the real gentling part is a particular way that we carry out the therapy with the child, which is, by its definition, extremely gentle. And I found that approach through the years has been very productive for me, and I wanted to share it with other clinicians out there.
So what's out there right now in terms of therapy, it doesn't take this kind of a gentle approach?
Well, there are several types of therapy out there for post-traumatic stress disorder,
mm-hmm.
but you know they've been based on adult models of PTSD,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the approaches are for adults. The cognitive behavioral, of course, that I mentioned is very direct in trying to address the trauma directly with the individual. But again, it was based out of the PTSD definition, which came about right around the Vietnam War time. And it's defined on soldiers who
mm-hmm.
are coming home from war. And, of course, you know, a five-year-old child who's lived in an abusive situation isn't a soldier, so you're going to have to treat them differently.
Very differently. Well, how has the whole way of treatment changed or evolved since the Vietnam era to encompass children? And I know it encompasses crime victims, other groups like that.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, it has evolved through years. We're learning more and more about PTSD and how it works inside individuals. For example, there's some research now showing that the brain chemistry of certain people may predispose them to PTSD.
Hmm.
So two people could go through very similar traumatic event, and maybe one comes out with trauma symptoms that last quite a while, and the other person may come out with some trauma symptoms that fade after 6 months. So, you know, that's how the difference is between the two, and the research that's going on is pretty amazing stuff when you look at it.
Is there a way to test that brain chemistry early so you know that you may be susceptible to?
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Wouldn't it?
To do that, but we can't really do that at
sure.
this point.
Sure.
And that is unfortunate. But I have high hopes that the rate of research and the insights that are coming pretty rapidly in the field, someday we may be able to do that.
At this point, is it really just more predictable if you look back into the history of a person, possibly how they grew up, their family dynamics as a predictor for...
Sure. Yeah, there may be a possibility here that the predisposition follows in families biologically,
mm-hmm.
obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But also when you look at developmentally through generation, people tend or families tend to have dysfunction that continue on from grandparents or, to parents, children, to grandchildren, and so forth. So that the social learning or the experience of living in an abusive home tends to produce another home in another generation that may have the same kind of abusive,
mm-hmm.
and therefore possibly the same kind of traumas occurring.
Sure. Well, what are some of the typical PTSD symptoms?
That's what's interesting, and what I try to convey in my book is that children seem to have a different expression of PTSD than adults do. And I believe there needs to be a new definition specifically for children who have had trauma as a result of, like, interpersonal abuse, like, child abuse in their home.
Mm-hmm.
Because children exhibit many of the same characteristics or symptom groups that adults do. And those main three symptom groups are agitation that's kind of unexplained. It's a vigilance and a readiness for something bad to happen. And that can look differently in different people and especially looks different in children. That's one group of symptoms. The second group of symptoms is re-experiencing. Some people call it flashback. I don't really like that word for the connotations it has with the 60s and drugs.
Right.
But it's more like an intense body and mental memory of the traumatic event. And re-experiencing can also include things like intrusive dreams or intrusive thoughts for the individual. And then the third grouping is kind of all together. It encompasses avoidance, numbing, and detachment. And the avoidance usually is that the person spends a whole lot of energy trying to push the bad memories away and try to forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hard to do.
This is where we get into the addictions and that sort of thing.
Yeah, correct.
Right.
Correct. Yeah, and especially in adults, of course.
Sure.
The numbing in teenagers, we often see kids not only abusing substance who've been abused, but also cutting and piercing and self tattoos and self mutilation and difficult things like that, and they do that. Their own reports are because they feel numb. Their emotions are just so numbed down and damaged that they do those things in order to feel something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last part of that grouping is detachment. That's kind of, the person just kind of detaches from people around them because the world isn't safe or their experience with other human beings has been so untrustworthy and so violent and so uncomfortable that they really don't want to engage with other people.
Mm.
So in the symptoms for children, how this expresses as children, as you can imagine, just the detachment alone, a child going to school and not being able to make friends, perhaps, because they feel different than other people or they can't trust other people, it becomes very difficult for children.
And then that just continues to play out, I assume, throughout their
life. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Left untreated, PTSD symptoms definitely become worse.
Mm-hmm.
And they can translate into other disorders later on in life if they're untreated. One of the most common things that occurs with untreated PTSD in children is it can move on to reactive attachment disorder, which is a serious, serious disability where the person cannot make satisfying relationships in their life, create them or keep them in their life. And as the divorce rate in our country shows, that may account for a lot of that.
That's true.
Without ability to attach. Yeah.
Well, how prolific do you think PTSD actually is in our society with children and with adults at varying degrees? I'm sure that we more so associate this with the real harsh situations, but clearly this could just be playing out on a subtle level.
Yeah, it can. The wonderful veterans that are coming back from the war right now, their PTSD aside, which I don't mean in any way to minimize that, but the children, it is very prevalent. It's kids that are abused, the rate of PTSD is somewhere near half to two-thirds, some professionals say, of kids that are abused will end up with either some PTSD symptoms or PTSD symptoms or a great deal of them that last for years. So it is very prevalent. It's out there. And in it doesn't need to be one dramatic event for a child. In many cases, the children that I encounter with this disorder have had just had very chaotic lives in their first few years of life, which may include actual abuse or sexual abuse or severe neglect. Or it could be that they witnessed their mother being abused in a domestic abuse situation. So a child doesn't actually have to be abused or neglected in order to gain these symptoms.
Now, what about just general long-term abandonment or emotional detachment from a parent? Could that produce PTSD?
Well, theoretically, it certainly could produce a stress disorder. But once again, in order to meet the criteria that is now established in the psychological community, there are very strict rules of application in order to give that diagnosis. And just those of us who are working in the field are seeing more and more children who carry the symptom but don't necessarily fit the strict criteria of PTSD.
So what do you think is actually being left out of the DSM manual at this point when you're dealing with children?
Well, that would be there needs to be a description of a complex PTSD or even a category that may be described something as rolling stress for a child who's living in these chaotic situations and possibly, you know, living with a parent who has a meth lab in the basement and there's not enough money and sometimes there's food and sometimes there's not and moves in the middle of the night. There could be all kinds of things that account for the symptoms that we do see and might be best described like a rolling stress.
Interesting. Do symptoms of PTSD, will they reach like a critical mass if someone at some point just becomes so overwhelmed with everything that's going on in their life?
Sure. That happens frequently for these children. Quite often, the time that people begin to notice or where people begin to notice there's something wrong with this child is in school because they spend so much time there. And when a child has a re-experience or a cue and a trigger in school and they begin to have a stress reaction or stress episode, as I like to call them, they're very dramatic. They're very behaviorally intense. And if they're not managed correctly, if the school staff don't know how to manage that, they can actually escalate the situation and make it worse and kind of guarantee that it's going to happen again.
Well, what's the difference between a stress episode then and just typical acting out in rebellious behavior?
Yeah, well, usually, you know, when a child becomes oppositional, we as adults, what we tend to do is to increase pressure. And what we do, we may stand up, we may come closer to the child, we might use our stern adult voice and give a louder directive. And at some point, that child is going to, you know, figure, oh, geez, I can't beat this one. I'm going to pop. And they give in. They may pout. They may cry. They may stamp their foot. They may throw something even or make loud noises. But in the case of a child who's having a stress episode related to their PTSD, all of those behaviors that you normally would engage in with the child are absolutely the wrong thing to do because they will escalate. It will get very, very intense sometimes.
And this is what you refer to as escalating discipline, and that really is a mistake when you're dealing with children.
That's very much in your, and it's also an indicator. I mean, when that occurs and you see the child escalate to these points where, you know, you see a 5 or 6-year-old child cursing in the classroom and disrobing, throwing their shoes and throwing desks over and hiding under desks or hiding in underneath the coats in the lockers. That's the kind of behavior you're going to see. And if you're applying pressure and that escalates, that's a very, very good indicator that, wow, something's going on in this child's life.
Clearly.
That is not easily explained just by my giving them a direction.
Now, will that kind of behavior be a surprise to parents, or will they have seen that at home as well?
Well, it depends on the life situation of the family. You
mm-hmm.
know, if the family has had intergenerational abuse and there are several people in the family who have PTSD, it becomes normalized in the family, and they don't usually think much of it. And that's why it usually gets treated, because the child goes to school, and there in school, that is not normalized, and that is not average. And people begin to have take a closer look at the child and want to help the child.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that schools and teachers are willing to work with children like this?
Well, yeah, some are, and I'm a big believer in education, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote Gentling, and one of the reasons why I'm here with you today is to educate people about how this works for children, so that they have an understanding that when children behave in this way, you need to alter how you interact with them in order to help them. Because each time the child goes through this stress episode, it's kind of like a splinter that gets pushed deeper.
Mm.
It's harder to fix.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want the child going through these stress episodes. We want to keep them de-stressed. We want to keep them comfortable. We want to help them experience their school environment, for example, as a wonderful and safe place to learn and have fun. So we need to teach the teachers and the educators how to respond appropriately to these children. And for the most part, I've found people and teachers and school staff pretty receptive. It's hard for them to understand, for example, the gentling approach at first, because when you see a highly oppositional, excitable child who's cursing and yelling and throwing things, and my prescription is to become gentle with them, they often view that as overindulgence.
Right.
You're indulging this child.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually once they have a few demonstrations of how it works, and the intensity and the frequency and the duration of these upsets lessen with using gentling, then they're usually convinced. It takes maybe 10, 15 minutes to use a gentling technique, whereas if you used your other technique, the child could go on like that for an hour and a half or 2 hours. Or even longer.
And disrupt everyone's day.
Correct.
So then these stress episodes are actually great opportunities to address treatment options.
Sure it is, because each time that the child experiences a safe, secure, positively responsive environment, meaning with another human being, wherever they're at, they're going to help them feel safer in that environment, helps them feel safer in relationships. It opens the door to the possibility of them beginning to process their traumatic event and then healing. Yes.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Hi there. Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with William Krill. His new book, Gentling, A Practical Guide to Treating PTSD and Abused Children, is out now. And you can find out more information through Bill's website, gentling.org. So clearly, then, it's incredibly important to this whole process that you know, caregivers, teachers, social workers, parents, they are all coordinated together in addressing this child.
Because I have found in using this over the past 12, 15 years that when you have, even if you have one person who's not buying into this gentling concept and the gentling approaches, the progress just goes so much slower
mm-hmm.
for the child.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the objective is to relieve these symptoms for the suffering child. I mean, that's what it's all about.
So I'd love to have you give us an example of you know, using this gentling approach with a child and what the maybe more typical approach would be in a given situation and how this works a little differently.
Sure. I recall an actual case where I happened to be in a school cafeteria, and the child was clearly reacting when I went in. And they came in just as the child was in the middle of this reactivity, and school staff were already responding. Essentially, the bell rang, and everyone was supposed to get up and go to their classroom, and this child refused to stand up.
Mm.
Because they refused to stand up, a teacher that was in the cafeteria came over and stood over the child with arms crossed, giving the firm directives that you must go now. And the more the person did this, the more resistant the child became.
Mm-hmm.
And so I politely asked if I could intervene with pretty grateful for me to do that.
mm-hmm.
And I walked over and basically did not stand over the child, but went across the table and sat down for a moment and was silent and waited until the child looked up at me. And then I spoke very, very gently and said, "You must be uncomfortable right now.
Mm-hmm.
You must be uncomfortable with all of this. I wonder what's going on." The child didn't say anything, and I said, "You look frightened to me. Would it be okay if I sat next to you?" The child knew me fairly well and nodded yes. So I came and sat next to the child and reached out and patted a hand and said, "Would you like to walk with me back to your classroom?" And the child nodded and stood up and took my hand, and we went to the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular stress episode was over. Now, that's a very mild stress episode.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, it could have very well escalated if that teacher had continued to pressure that child intensely
mm-hmm.
To do what they wanted them to do.
Mm-hmm. Clearly, it would have been down to the office and calling the parents and all of that. So interesting. So do you do a lot of work in schools?
I have done a lot of work in schools, and different schools have different hospitality ratings, shall we say, for people coming in.
Yes.
I work in schools and continue to do that on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, my focus really is on one-to-one work with children and with adults and parents and foster parents and so on
mm-hmm.
in order to get this this idea out. So that more people can use it and more children can benefit.
So what other disorders are commonly misdiagnosed when there's PTSD present?
Oh, that's an important issue. Many children start out with misdiagnosis, and they can go decades.
I'm sure.
They get decades with the wrong diagnosis because nobody poked around enough. You know, they usually get ADHD because of the physical agitation that accompanies post-traumatic stress episodes. They get oppositional defiant disorder for the same reason. They get bipolar because one moment the child is smiling and fine, and the next minute they're cute and spinning around like the Tasmanian devil in the classroom. So they get labeled with all of these kinds of things. And I think, you know, to be fair, I think one of the problems with the system is that oftentimes, the people making assessments don't have enough time with the child just because of the way the systems are set up
mm-hmm.
To do a thorough history. But a thorough history, I find, is extremely important because once you see the trauma or you pin down traumatic events and then you see these clusters of behaviors, it becomes so apparent and glaringly apparent that the issue is PTSD. But and the other reason is that, let's face it, it's hard to talk to a young child about their rape, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That's not pleasant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I would rather see a child who has simple ADHD than a child, you know, who's been a six-year-old girl who's been raped by her mother's paramour.
Sure.
I certainly would. It's an easier case. It's much more pleasant. I don't have to hear things from the child that are going to cause me to have nightmares.
Right, and then it opens up the whole issue about these kind of diagnoses, ADHD, and then the whole prescribing some sort of antidepressant or,
sure.
or you know, that oh, sort
yeah.
of thing. And that's a real easy way to deal with the issue.
Sure, sure. There is really no medication for PTSD at this point, as we talked at the top of our conversation about brain chemistry.
Right.
Someday there may be. Mm-hmm. Someday there may be a corrective medication that really eases a lot of these symptoms and keeps all those chemicals from flooding the brain when the child is cued or triggered by a memory,
mm-hmm.
But not right now. There are medications, however, that can ease some of the symptoms. So if the child has some depression associated with stress, I mean, I'd be depressed, too, if I had all these bad things happening to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes an anti-anxiety medication helps a little bit. And quite often sleep medications are helpful in getting the child to get back into a normal sleep pattern because of the nightmares, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
but these
are
short-term. Short-term,
yeah,
though.
Those are Mm-hmm. They're nice assists, and at points in treatment, they're very, very valuable, but certainly cannot rely on medications as a full treatment for these kinds of issues in children who've been abused.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So tell us a little more about the instrument, the tool that you developed to actually profile a child that oh. is, you know.
Yeah, you know, that came about as a... It's just a way for me to double-check my own work, because originally when I began this work, I was using adult methods on children, and it wasn't working,
mm-hmm.
so I got to find something better, and as a matter of fact, it was children who taught me how to do the gentling process, just kind of like by accident. I kind of stumbled on it, and it started working, so I kept doing it, and then I wanted to make sure that what I was doing was really working, and it wasn't just my imagination. So I took a lot of the characteristics from the DSM description of PTSD, as well as some other descriptions from a couple of other leaders in PTSD, and I came up with 102 items that I wanted to see how intense and how frequent they were expressed by the child. And I began using this interview with either the parent or the foster parent or the adoptive parent, and it came out pretty neat. I started seeing a lot of high scores with children who were already diagnosed PTSD,
mm-hmm.
and scores that were high in the areas that I would expect them to be. And then I saw that different children would have different scores in different areas. So what developed was a kind of profile of that particular child's expression of their disorder. And that helps focus treatment. We know where to apply the treatment. And it helps with outcomes because after treatment every 4 or 6 months, we redo that interview. And in general, we find that there's a drop in the raw score.
Isn't that amazing? So that profile makes it much easier to pinpoint the actual
Correct.
Issue. Mm-hmm.
Correct, yeah. One child might have a high score in re-experiencing, where another one might have a higher score in avoidance, numbing, and detachment.
Mm.
So wherever that high point is, where they're expressing most symptoms, that's where we plan our treatment attack and how to help them get through that.
And this is what is critically needed in the present-day models and the DSM.
Correct.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yep. Yeah, so interesting. Special challenges. What we, you know, we're kind of talking about children in their home environment. But what about foster parents? Is there any other set of circumstances or issues that kids deal with foster parents?
God bless foster parents.
Right.
I've probably known hundreds of them, and they're just by and large the salt of the earth kind of people. And and for all the work that I do with stress disorder children, I could not be a foster parent, and I tell them that often when I see them. They're wonderful people, and oftentimes they'll have more than one child with these kinds of issues in their home. Their patience is absolutely amazing in most cases, and educating them, they're often very, very open to my approaches, because many of the things, quite frankly, they've tried or been told by other therapists in the past haven't worked for them, and they're still having these huge upsets. So it is more difficult, obviously, when a child goes to a foster home. That's an added stressor. They're out of their own home. They may be missing their siblings if they're not with them. They may even be missing, you know, the abuser who might have been a parent.
Mm.
So it gets very complex for them and very stressful. So, yeah, there's that added stress on top of all the stuff the child already has. They're in a stranger's home, and in a strange house and having to learn all the new rules in that house. So that's an added level of work that we have to do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you work a lot with foster parents, Bill?
I have in the past, but most recently I'm making a transition to more private practice material in an outpatient kind of setting than I am going into homes. But I still have a few foster parents that I go into homes with, primarily because I'm just passionate about helping little ones that are experiencing this. And it's just very satisfying to see kids begin to heal in foster homes from these experiences. And so I guess I do it. I continue to go into foster homes for a selfish reason. I like to see the healing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's such a great need for it. So you've been in this field for many, many years. You know, we're living in a time right now that there is stress coming at basically everybody at so many different angles. And I'm wondering how just our modern-day stressors are affecting children.
Sure. You know, when I talk about a stress episode, any child can have a stress episode for any number of reasons. A child may have never been abused, may be coming from a wonderful family who's loving and caring and would never strike a child or deprive a child of food. But our children, the average child these days, goodness, they're so involved with so many things, and they're academic, and they are stressed. And there comes a point in, even for you and I, when we get too stressed, oh my goodness, I don't know what you do, but I've been known to become angry and say some choice words and be somewhat out of control. You know, that's a human characteristic that we can only handle so much stress in our lives before it's going to vent or before it's going to explode. So the average child can have stress episodes, and I found if you deal with the average child's stress episode who's not abused in the same gentle fashion, you get a better result.
Mm-hmm. Clearly. So in this whole approach, I imagine a parent really has to kind of do their own work as well when to kind of prepare for dealing with a child that has PTSD. I mean, I can't imagine a parent with the stresses that most parents have right now being able to, you know, deal with one of these kids if they haven't kind of controlled their own stress and their own issues.
Sure. Yeah, that's very true. When a child is still in the home, say of a grandparent who's caring for them because the major stressors took place with their parent. That grandparent is under tremendous pressure, and they need a good deal of support from therapists and from social workers in order to, just withstand the onslaught of these symptoms quite often.
Yeah.
It is very stressful for them, and they do need support to go through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you tag on some really great tools at the end of your book. There's handouts for caregivers. There's something you call quick teach sheets, and I think this is really just an amazing addition to this book. Can you tell us more about?
Well, actually, that's how the book started.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the book started with the quick teach sheets. I made those up to start handing to teachers and principals and social workers and guidance counselors and even judges, you name it, to educate people, a quick way to hand, here, read this.
Mm-hmm.
Quick way to educate them about some of these issues and the need to approach children gently. And out of that, that's what it came out of. And then a very good friend of mine, colleague of mine, Dr. Heidi Sedwick, who's a psychologist, just started encouraging me. She said, Bill, you got to write this stuff down in a book and share it with other people. And I took her advisement to begin to do that. And there we have Gentling. That's how it came about. But yeah, those handouts are intended for anybody who gets the book to print those off and hand them out at will.
Mm.
Hand them out to as many people as we can to get the word out about this approach so that more kids can be healed.
That's fantastic. So your website, gentling.org, tell us what we can find up there.
Oh, lots of stuff on gentling.org. You can find a sample chapter of the book on PTSD and children page. I have several pages on there. There's one for PTSD and children. That's by far the largest. There's a bunch of one-page quick teach articles on there. And then there's a page for PTSD and adults survivors of abuse, child abuse. There's a couples page, and there's a video page. There's all kinds of freebies on there for people just to kind of get them in touch with the entire project and the entire philosophy behind Gentling.
That's fantastic. Do you do long-distance counseling as well, Bill?
No, not at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my plate is so full right now with what I have locally and trying to get the word out about Gentling. And as these things usually happen, Gentling has spawned other other books.
Books, of course.
I'm working on a workbook, for example, for teenagers who have been abused and have PTSD. I'm working on an attachment book or attachment exercise book for parents and children. Maybe the child was abused by one of the parents' paramours or whatever, and the parent is having to overcome or gain trust again with the child. So there's all kinds of work out there for me to do, and it just seems to keep multiplying the more I do.
Of course, of course. How important is it for a child or a teenager to actually have some kind of a label or a diagnosis that you know gives them more understanding of what they're going through?
Well, that certainly is helpful. You know, the DSM and diagnostics are meant as a way, shorthand for professionals and other folks to kind of understand what's going on with an individual. But once again, you know, if anything, this work has taught me that each individual with PTSD has their own expression. There's similarities, of course, between them, but oh my goodness, is there a vast range of how people express their PTSD and their issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I just wonder, you know, for children that may be thinking, oh, there's something wrong with me, or there's something different, I'm not like other kids, you know,
right.
To actually have that adult say, well, this is what it is, or, you know, that must be so important.
Sure, yes, it is. I understand your question now. Yeah, I often share with kids, I don't know that I always use with the very young ones under, say, the age of five, I certainly don't use the phrase PTSD.
Sure.
But I do talk to them about the scary feeling that they have and that it's an uncomfortable feeling and assure them that I think that we can help you make that scary feeling go away and be a happier child.
Fascinating work. So it sounds like you really are busy in the next few years here.
Yes, I am.
Yes, lots of books. So, well, I guess you'll put updates up on your website.
Sure, yeah, I try to update that as often as I can. Sometimes it takes a little longer than usual, but I fit it in the evening.
Great. Bill, this has been a great interview, so full of information and really a fantastic book with great tools for caregivers, parents, really anyone that's around this issue. I want to thank you for coming on to the show today.
You're welcome. I really appreciate it, Juanita.
You bet. So did you just take the last minute here to share any final thoughts? Did you get everything out that you wanted to? Or?
Well, yeah. I guess my final thought would be, you know, you never can lose in human relationships when you're gentle. When in doubt, become gentle, and you'll have a much better effect and a much better relationship come out of that and potentially a very, very healed person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wonderful thoughts. Thank you so much, Bill.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, listeners, that's been William Krill, his book, Gentling, A Practical Guide to Treating PTSD in Abused Children, is on shelves now through Amazon, local booksellers, as well. More information on Bill's website, gentling.org. So there's a lot of resources. Do check out this book. It really is fantastic, a totally new approach, and a worthwhile read for sure. So I want to thank you for tuning in again to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.